Okay, so that is the title of my talk, Dynamic Data Compression for Wireless Transmission over a Fading Channel. So this network model is very simple. I basically have a single node that's a wireless node, and that node receives data from a random number of sensor units every time slot. And so that data must be compressed, then stored in a single queue of that node for eventual transmission over the wireless channel. And I'm also assuming that the wireless channel has potentially time-varying channel states due to environmental changes or mobility within the network itself. So you can imagine this as a single node system or as an isolated node within a larger sensor network. And the goal of this talk is to do this compression and transmission operation in an energy-efficient way, where we notice that both compression and transmission expend power. In particular, the signal processing due to the compression operation can be non-negligible. So we want to minimize the total average power expenditure, which is a sum of the power due to compression and the power due to transmission. In some cases, they are comparable. And I'll get to that a bit later. Okay, so we have a time-slotted system, and let's say every time slot, A of T is the number of packets that this node receives, and so this is a very simple model. Let's just assume that every time slot, we receive a random number of packets, potentially one packet from each sensor, so every sensor is just sending either zero packets or one packet every time slot. So the number of packets that we receive is somewhere between zero and N, depending on how many sensors send me a packet. But we're assuming that this data is spatially correlated, so all of these packets could potentially be compressed so that you can more efficiently transmit them over the wireless link. And I'm going to assume that we have a collection of different compression options. So we have K different compression options. Each of them has an expected compression ratio that might be different, and some of them might have better compression ratios. But they also might take different expected amounts of power to do the compression. So in particular, actually, we don't have K. So these compression options could be, for example, various types of Lempel-Ziv compression or Huffman source coding, or you might have some kind of a wavelet decomposition that you're doing on the data that requires some signal processing and is doing number crunching to compress that data with various outcomes. And I'll represent C or phi A of T comma K of T as the compression function. So this is the random amount of bits that come at the output of this compression operation. Given that the number of packets going in is A of T, and I choose option K of T for my compression operation. And so for simplicity, let's just assume that every packet has a fixed size of D bits. So I should say, really, we have K plus 1 compression options. The first compression option, or option 0, is no compression at all. So if we have A packets, if we don't do any compression, then the output of the compressor is just A times B bits, because it's the same as the raw data coming in. But the power required for that is 0. If we decide to do an actual compression operation, say algorithm 1, I'll let M A comma 1 be the expected bits, the output of the compression, given that we have A packets coming into the compressor, and we choose compression option 1. MA2 is the expected for compression option 2, and so forth. So we're assuming that we have some kind of a table of these expected compression ratios and a table of the expected power required to do that. So more sophisticated compression algorithms might take more power. So as an example, let's just suppose that at a certain time slot, these two sensors send packets. So we have A of T is equal to 2, and let's suppose that we do some compression operation. Then the output is random. So in this case, the packets go into the compressor, and the output in this case is that we've compressed to 1.1 units of data at the compressor with a total power of 0.2 power units. But this is a random operation, so at another time slot, we might have another two packets coming in, so A of T is again 2, And we might try the same compression operation, but this time we have a compression output of 0.9 data units and a different amount of power, 0.3. Okay, so this is a sort of a variable output system. And just as a final example to emphasize the idea, we might have 3 packets coming in, and then this is the random outcome. Okay, so then this data that is now compressed is stored in a queue, and we eventually have to transmit that data over the wireless channel. And I'm assuming that this channel is potentially time-varying, where S of t represents the current channel state on slot t. And I'm assuming also that you can observe that channel state, so you can make an opportunistic transmission decision. So as an example, S of t might take values in a discrete set, for example, good, medium, or bad, in which case the transmission capabilities depend on whether you're in the good state, medium state, or bad state. Or the S of t could be a continuous variable that represents, say, an attenuation coefficient for the wireless fading over the channel at a current time. And the p tran of t is the power that you decide to expend on time slot t due to the transmission. And this power could be, it's constrained with maximum power p max, but it could be constrained and be continuous, anywhere from 0 to p max. Or it could have a discrete set of options. For example, you can choose between 0, p max, and maybe a third option, p max over 2, as an example. And I'm assuming that the transmission rate, mu of t, is the transmission rate on slot t. That's given as just some general function of the power I decide to transmit on slot t and the current channel state. And so as an example, this could be a continuous, maybe concave function of power for different channel states. Bad gives you this kind of rate power curve, medium this one, and good. Or it could be non-concave or maybe even discontinuous. As an example, you might have a coding scheme that selects from one of several finite number of coding options, in which case the transmission rates are really finite set of options, and you have piecewise linearity in the function. So this is a result that holds for general transmission rate functions. Okay, so what are the queuing dynamics now? Well, this is very simple. Let Q of t be the number of bits in this queue backlog. And so at time t plus 1, the number of bits is just the maximum of what was there at time t minus what was transmitted, where transmission depends on power, plus the random amount of bits that come in to the system, where this R of t is the random output of the compressor. So remember, R of t is basically given by this compression function that depends on the number of packets that arrive and my compression decision. So the goal is then to design a joint strategy for choosing a compression operation and a transmission decision over time in order to support all of the traffic and minimize the total average power expenditure, which is a sum of the compression and transmission power. But we also want low delay, and I'll talk about how that works in a minute. Okay, to get intuition about the problem, let's consider a very trivial case where the optimal decision is also trivial. So let's suppose we have a system where all three of the following conditions hold. Suppose we have a static channel, so the channel never changes. Suppose we have a linear rate power curve, so the transmission rate is just a linear function of power, in which case we always have the same units of power per bit when we transmit. And finally, let's assume that the raw data rate is relatively small, so this is the total expected number of bits coming into the system as raw data, uncompressed data. And let's assume that that is less than mu max, which is the maximum possible average transmission rate out of the system. Well, if all three of these hold, it's very easy to see that the average transmission power is just proportional to the number of bits transmitted, and the decision is trivial. Let's just choose a compression option that essentially looks at the expected number of bits that you would compress and sees if the energy saving would be more than what you would spend transmitting those bits. So it would be a very simple decision of just greedily, if you have A packets, just choose the compression option that minimizes the expected compression power plus the expected transmission power, given that you've compressed those bits, and then choose the option that minimizes these over all options within this table. But if one or more of these, and in fact, this this kind of a system has been studied experimentally. So even in these simple conditions, it's been shown that you can have a significant energy savings by making an intelligent compression decision just on this simple rule. But this rule is somewhat fragile because all three of these conditions may not hold. So we want a more general algorithm. And in fact, the more general algorithm, when one or more of these conditions fail, is not trivial. So what are the prior experimental works? Well, this problem is motivated by the fact that, in fact, you can have real savings by doing intelligent compression. And so in particular, to get back to Armand's question, yes, the compression signal processing power required for the compression can be significant. And in particular, this paper is an experimental paper that just shows that you can have a significant savings if you do intelligent compression, particularly when you have a network of nodes. And this paper here reports typical compression ratios and power ratios for typical algorithms. And basically, the conclusion is that sometimes it's good to compress, and other times it's better not to compress. And it really depends on the situation. So this idea that sometimes it's good and other times it's not really motivates the problem of doing a dynamic algorithm that will work well in any situation. And I should also note that this data compression is a really important problem and is sort of a hot topic now with the idea of compressed sensing. If you're at the CISS conference, Richard Braniuk gave just a really outstanding plenary talk on the field of compressed sensing. Okay, so let's talk now about defining optimality, and then I want to show how to get to optimality. So let's assume that the arrivals A of T are IID over time slots, and the number of packets that arrive is given by some general distribution, but we don't necessarily know what this distribution is. Likewise, the channel states are IID over slots with some general distribution, but we don't necessarily, again, know what this distribution is. So let's define R min as the minimum bit rate out of the compressor. So this is the bit rate that you would achieve on a time average basis if every time slot you just make a compression decision that would maximize your compression ratio. And let's define R max as the maximum average transmission rate, which would just be the transmission rate out of the system if you allocate P max units of power at every time slot for transmission. And let's assume that R min is less than R max so that it's possible to stabilize the system. So intuitively, there's really two reasons to compress the data. One is, well, we might have to compress the data just to stabilize the queue. So it might be that signal processing is so expensive that we don't want to compress at all, but we've got so much raw data that we actually have to compress just to get it down to something that we can transmit stably. The other option is that, in fact, if the compression power is not so expensive or it's comparable to transmission power, then the power sent compressing can actually reduce the power that you spend later transmitting the packet. Okay, so let me define H star R and G star R as sort of the optimal, these are sort of optimality functions. So H star of R is defined to be the minimum average power due to compression that would be required if all we want is to yield a mean output rate of R at the output of the compressor. So in general, this H star of R function can be written as a nonlinear program, where that, I just plot it here. So as a function of R, H star R is the power due to compression. So you can see, you can prove that in general this is a decreasing convex function, because if we want a larger compression rate at the output, we don't have to do as much to compress the data. I should also mention that this function H star R depends on the full statistics of the arrival process. So this doesn't just depend on the mean arrival rate, but it depends on the entire distribution for the number of packets that arrive on a particular slot T. So in order to compute this function exactly, you would need to know the exact arrival distribution. You don't just need the mean or the second moment, you need the full distribution in order to define this optimality curve H star R. And likewise, G star R is the minimum average power required to transmit on the transmitter side with an average transmission rate of R. And in general, this is now the opposite. It's a convex increasing function because you require more and more power to transmit the data. And again, this can be written as sort of a nonlinear optimization, but it would require full knowledge of the steady state channel distribution. Okay, so these are going to be used. I'm going to use these functions to define optimality, but I want to note that in order to define optimality, you would in general need to know the full channel statistics and the arrival statistics. So the first theorem is very simple. It just says that any policy that stabilizes the system has to yield a sum power expenditure that's greater than or equal to PF star, where PF star is just the average power that optimizes this following problem, which is just the sum of the H star function, the energy due to compression, plus the G star function, the energy due to transmission. Minimize this function of a single variable r over the interval from r min to this cap here, which is a min of r max and the raw data rate. So this is just a minimization of a sum of convex functions. It can be shown that it has a very simple and well-defined minimum. And so this minimum defines the minimum possible sum power that any algorithm has to use in order to stabilize the system. So our goal is to try to get this minimum power in a dynamic way without knowing what the channel statistics are. So remember, this is a very simple optimization, but it's just an existential result because we really don't have knowledge of these H star R or G star R functions. So this is an existential result, but we want to get to that optimality in a dynamic way, and I'm going to use this idea of joint Lyapunov stability with performance optimization, which is a nice stochastic network optimization technique that I developed a while ago. So as a brief history, the idea of Lyapunov drift for queuing systems has been well studied. In the case of stability, perhaps Pasulis was one of the first to use it for data networks, and then it's been very useful for stability in data networks. And something I did in my thesis was to have a very simple extension of it that does both stability and performance optimization. And there are some alternative approaches that use fluid model transformations. But I want to highlight this approach and use this particularly because this approach yields explicit performance delay trade-offs. And I'm going to say something more in the end about these delay trade-offs and how they can actually be improved. Okay, so what is the idea? Well, we define a Lyapunov function, where in this case we just have a single q, so the Lyapunov function is just that q value squared. And we define the Lyapunov drift as the expected change in the Lyapunov function from one slot to the next, given that we have a current q value on time t. And so the technique is at every slot we observe the q value, q of t, and we take a control action to minimize this thing, which is a sum of drift plus a cost metric. So the previous stability analysis just took a control action to minimize this drift. And so this extension is extremely simple, but it's also very powerful. You just add on the cost metric. And so the theorem is if you do this every time slot, you get a Q size, which is order V, where V is this control parameter that I can choose whatever I want to be. And the distance between the actual cost and the optimal cost is within order 1 over V. So there's this explicit delay utility trade-off. So I can put this V parameter arbitrarily large to make cost arbitrarily close to optimal with a linear trade-off in the Q backlog. Okay, so let's just do that for this algorithm. Minimizing that drift term greedily every slot results in this algorithm, which is a nice sort of decoupled algorithm for both compression and transmission. So here's what it does. So every time slot t, the compressor observes the current number of packets that arrive to it, and it chooses a compression option by looking at this table and choosing the compression option k at time t that is the argument that minimizes this metric. Where what is this metric? Well, this metric depends on the mak function. So remember, this is the average number of bits given that we have an input of a and a compression option k. So this is known from the table. This is a weight that is just a Q backlog, so this is known. And then this is the expected power, phi of A comma K, is also known from this table. So it's basically a simple table lookup and choose the argument k that maximizes this. Well, intuitively what this does is if there's a large Q backlog, you can see that in order to minimize this thing, you want to make this M function smaller if this Q is large. So that says that if it's a large Q backlog, you choose a compression option that is likely to compress the data a lot, so you won't add very much more to the queue. And the transmission is that on slot T, you just observe the channel state and choose a transmission power that optimizes this quantity, which is, again, argmax. It's basically just maximizing a function of one variable, P. So it's very, both of these are very simple to do in real time. And again, intuitively, if the Q backlog is large, you want to make a power decision that transmits more data intuitively. Okay, so then what is the, here's my sort of concluding performance, and then I have another slide or two that has some comments. So what does this algorithm do? Well, for any parameter V, which is our control parameter that's going to affect this energy delay trade-off, the total average power expenditure, which is the sum of compression and transmission power, is less than or equal to this P star, which is the optimal power for any algorithm, defined by that existential theorem, plus a fudge factor, which decays like 1 over V, where V is the control parameter. So I can make this control parameter arbitrarily large to get arbitrarily close to this thing, while the average Q backlog is bounded by this expression, which has a numerator and a denominator, and the numerator grows linearly with V. And then there's some constants here, which are very simple constants, which are just essentially second moments of the raw data arrival process. Okay. So if you look visually, if you have a, here I'm going to plot average power and average delay versus this V parameter, which is this control parameter. So we can make average power go arbitrarily close to the P star optimal value with a linear trade-off in delay. Okay. So as a final note, I just want to note that this gives an order 1 over V, order V delay trade-off. It turns out this is something that I've done in other contexts to get this kind of trade-off. But it turns out that this trade-off is not optimal. In fact, you can get an order 1 over V square root of V trade-off, and that was first developed by Randy Berry, and I call it the Berry-Gallagher bound. And in fact, that can be actually done in an online way for multi-user systems. So in fact, we can improve on this trade-off. Let's see. So in conclusion, this is my real conclusion slide. This is essentially the trade-off that we can get for this algorithm, but it is possible to get a better square root trade-off using a more sophisticated approach. And so that concludes my talk, and I'll take any questions you might have.
Yeah. I'm just curious why you don't consider the time it takes to compress. Is that not a factor? There's also latency. If you're making a decision to compress in a certain way, there's a latency penalty associated with it. And if that's the case,
That's right. Okay, so the question is, what about the latency? So here I'm of compression. Here I'm assuming that whatever compression option you do takes one time slot. So the output of the compression option is just delivered. So you could extend that, but what happens if it takes a random number of time slots? And so that's not what I've treated here.
It's not random.
Or a fixed number of time slots, say k slots. So what you can do in that case is exactly what you said. You have now sort of a reservoir of data that is in process of being compressed, and so essentially now there's a time lag between what you deliver to the queuing system and what you're actually compressing. And it turns out that that does not affect performance optimality at all. And in fact, you're going to get the exact same kind of trade-off if you take into account that time lag. But the difference is that your delay is going to be increased by this lag. So you're using out-of-date, essentially you're using out-of-date Q backlog information in your compression decision. So that's what it would amount to. But in fact, let me go back to this.
So you're talking about a case where you might have variable amount of compression, right? Yes. Which fits Then it doesn't matter.
Okay, so let me argue even for variables that it's not going to matter so much. So the idea is that here I'm doing an algorithm that minimizes this drift. But in fact, I'm not really minimizing this drift, I'm just minimizing a bound on this drift. And so in fact, all we need is to take an action that minimizes this to within an additive constant. And so in fact, if there's this constant lag in the system, you can write the up and up drift and show that that's just going to amount to an additive constant in minimizing this. So you're going to be off by an additive constant, but that's just going to increase sort of this B parameter, and it's going to increase delay a little bit, but you're still going to get the same trade-off. So that's sort of this is what I'm referring to when I say it's not going to affect the systems too much. And of course, I haven't done the analysis. There might be some other scenarios where it doesn't quite work, but this is sort of essentially what I'm falling back on. I think you were first. Yeah, so here I'm looking at the simple case of a node. In order to expand to, say, a multi-hop network such as a tree, there are some difficulties. And I think it can be done. I haven't done that. But here's some of the difficulties. Here I'm looking at spatial correlation of the data. But if you compress the data, a general algorithm could do sort of partial compression and then send it to another node, and now it's going to be combined with some other data. And now it gets kind of messy, because what is the model that you're going to use to now compress data that has already been partially compressed when there's other, and so it's not clear how even best to model that. And so I think that's one of the main challenges, the modeling aspect. Another aspect challenge is sort of the delay that's associated with the multi-hop data, where you've got correlated data, but it's arriving to a downstream node with different delays, and so you have to essentially wait in order to do your compression option with data that might be correlated with you. It's essentially a learning parameter.
And so you're beating uncertainty. You're getting the future information to... There's no future information used in deciding.
Right. Right, yeah. So this is not using channel statistics or arrival statistics, but it's essentially learning that through the V parameter, where V is big, you have more time to learn. Okay, so there's two levels of that question. One is, if the arrivals A of T are correlated, so the number of packets that arrive are correlated over time. And the second level of that is if the compression, the packets themselves have data that is correlated, so that here, instead of just doing spatial correlation, there could be temporal correlation and compression. So the first is easier. If the data itself, A of T, is non-IID over time, the same algorithm works. Essentially, the trade-off now is going to be increased so that the delay is now going to be multiplied by essentially a mixing term, which is a factor larger than one, which essentially, if you have non-IID but ergodic arrivals, it's essentially sort of the mixing time of that ergodic process. But you can show that you still have the same trade-offs. On the other hand, if the data itself is correlated over time, then you have to play some more clever games, because now you can make more intelligent compression decisions by not just compressing data that arrives on one slot, but compressing data that arrives on slot T with other data that arrives on T plus 5. Right, so the question is, what about the energy due to receive? In some sense, I'm looking at just a single node here, So that issue would be more important if I looked at the network case. But in this case, I'm just assuming that whatever I'm doing to receive is already determined. So I'm just receiving this packet, and I'm not optimizing that decision. These packets have been received. So that would just come on as a constant power expenditure that's already been done. On the other hand, if I have a network, then it might be more important to make a decision about how do I want to receive this data from this guy or not. And so that you could also, that you'd have to extend the model to look at that.
Okay. Let's thank the speaker again, and then there's a break for we'll probably break by the next speaker set up. And let's reconvene here. I think we can reconvene, I think you're right. I think Mike, you took a much shorter period. So let's reconvene at 10:45, so that'll be too long. So the break is 10:30 to 11. Let's reconvene at 10:45.
Is that the same kind of relation? Now, slide